Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
It feels like it's been absolutely forever since we did this.
It does. I feel like I've forgotten how to podcast.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And I think that's evidenced
I feel like I never knew how to, but I feel like if I did know, it has been since forgotten. See,
I was about to say, Paul, it feels like you never knew.
Yeah. But yeah, no, we are back. We were getting caught up. A lot has happened since we last talked. I mean, I think some of it we're saving for our special pop culture of 2025 conversation. But there's a couple of things that we could probably talk about that we haven't, that's come out since we last spoke, which is the rumor that Brian Michael Bendis will be coming back to Marvel next year.
I don't think that's
on
a rumor.
Avengers.
I think that's actual facts.
Oh, is it? Is it? Is it?
Well, I don't know about the Avengers part of it, but the back to Marvel is actual facts. Because I saw announcements. Did that come out of New York Comic Con?
Yeah, I think it was around New York Comic Con.
Yeah. But yeah, but I haven't heard that he was going to be on Avengers. But
no,
yeah.
I got to tell you, other than One World Under Doom, like I'm pretty hard out on most Marvel right now.
Same.
Because of the Age of Revelation stuff, or both of them. Are in the Age of Revelation. And I'm out right now. It's not something I'm interested in.
They're not, with the exception of a book we'll talk about today. I'm really not interested in what they're telling over there. You know, both in the larger dynamic or even in their solo, you know, non-crossover stories. There's just not a lot happening at Marvel that gets my interest. And it just seems like a rather shallow pool of storytelling going on.
Unfortunately, I feel the same about DC and Marvel right now. I actually had weeks where I bought no books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find books by other companies that seem interesting. I've been picking up a lot of one-offs here and there because I am hard out on everything KO for DC. And I am hard out on everything with the Marvel crossover as well.
Yeah.
So there's not much I'm buying right now.
I think it was last week or week before last, literally, but not a book. You know, not a single thing did I buy from an indie, from Marvel, from DC. I'm having better luck with DC than Wayne is. I'm enjoying KO. And
yeah, same here. I'm enjoying KO.
But I will tell you that it's not a very dynamic field of books right now from the big two. I think the more interesting stuff is happening with the independent publishers.
Yeah, and like you, Aaron, I had a week I bought nothing, and I can't remember that happening for
decades. Yeah, usually there's at least one thing, right? But, you know, I'm getting more kick out of the Conan books than I am out of almost anything coming out right now. You know, those Conan books are from Titan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm way behind on Exquisite Corpses, but, you know, have really enjoyed that.
It's still quite good. Yeah.
I mean,
Exquisite Corpses, the Energon universe.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, when I purchase books, those are the things I read first. And Rook Exodus is back, too. I'm enjoying that.
There's one of the things I do enjoy about us not recording. And guys, you know, it's... I secretly celebrate when we don't record because I don't have a signed reading. Yeah, I can just read whatever the hell I want to read. And I've gotten into this book, Escape, from Image, that is just fantastic. It's set in World War II, and it's very anamorphic sort of animals. The you know, like dogs, you know, are the allies, and the bats are the Nazis. And I'm just getting a real kick out of reading this book. And I'm just like, I probably never would have had time to explore this if we hadn't been off for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, my big book is Captain Planet. Mm. I am absolutely loving this modern remake of Captain Planet.
So,
you know, we were talking about Bendis returning to Marvel. You remember when Bendis left Marvel to go to DC, and there was just all this fanfare, you know, Bendis is coming to DC, and they, you know, pinned him to Superman, and it was going to be a big damn deal. And, you know, then Bendis just really
Yeah, he came in like an asteroid smacking into DC.
Yeah, he just really, you know, it was a big bunch of nothing out of Bendis at DC. He really just, you know, didn't stick the landing like he did, you know, in his work at Marvel. So he's returning to Marvel and not fanfare. You know, there's not a lot of like key art out there right now, you know, pimping Bendis arrival. It's just, yeah, Bendis is coming back. Yeah, yay.
Yeah, well, maybe once the actual book is announced or whatever, you know, the solicitations come out, it'll be a bigger deal.
I certainly understand why Marvel wants him back, because they don't really have a powerhouse writer at the moment. You know, Jason Aaron is doing fantastic work over at DC, and he is having a degree of success that Bendis did not enjoy while at DC. And you know, Jason Aaron is kind of doing it upright. I'll be really curious to see if Bendis can, you know, find that energy again. Because I'll be honest with you, loved his Avengers stuff. You know, his Disassembled way back in the day is what got me back into comics after a long hiatus. I, you know, super enjoyed Disassembled, and then his work on New Avengers. It was great stuff. So I'm curious to see if he can, you know, find an energy in the comics, because I do feel in particular that the Avengers has gone off the rails and has been off the rails for a very long time.
So, you know, the news I'm excited about, though, because it's not comic news, but it is definitely geek news that came out over the past few weeks. Lego is releasing two official sets that are things that have they've never had the license for before, that have me extremely excited. The first
Star Trek. Are you talking about the Enterprise?
Yep. The Enterprise D with all the minifigs, and Data comes with Spot. If you buy it on Black Friday online, you get a space shuttle, you know, shuttlecraft as well, free with it. I have a lot of like knockoff brands and mock kits of Star Trek stuff, but they've never had the actual license.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am incredibly excited about that. The other one is Power Rangers. They are going to do a Megazord with all new minifigs for all of the Rangers. And they have never had the license for that either. Two properties I absolutely love. And particularly, I have a spot on my shelf where I've got Voltron, I've got Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, and Soundwave, that are all giant robots that need a Megazord sitting up there to finish off that shelf, because they have the engineering down for giant robots.
I'm actually surprised that Lego has never had the Power Rangers license until now. So
Megablocks had it years ago, but Lego has never had it.
Huh. I mean, they definitely seem like, you know, meant to be. But, you know, speaking of kaiju, you know, since we last spoke, they also announced that the sequel to Godzilla Minus One is coming out, or is, I guess, going into production, Godzilla Minus Zero.
Yeah, you know, I find it amusing that we went to Minus One to Minus Zero for the sequel. And no one's ever really been able to explain what the hell that title means.
No,
but by all means, let's double down on that.
Yeah, because I understood. I mean, the way I understood Godzilla Minus One was that it was like literally this is the first Godzilla movie, right? Like I kind of took it to mean like this takes place before the initial mm-hmm. Godzilla movie. But Minus Zero, kind of like, now I'm confused.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, is this a prequel? It's like, does this take place even before then? Like, maybe this is a storyline about that little Godzilla that we saw at the beginning of Minus One. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm curious, like, what is the story they're going to... Because Minus Zero was a very interesting and different story. Or Minus One, I mean. It was a very interesting and different story, but I don't know how you do a sequel to that, or a prequel if it's a Minus Zero.
Yeah, maybe it's a World War One Godzilla movie.
Or I guess Minus One is actually further back than Minus Zero, so...
Maybe it is a sequel. That's true. I didn't think like mathematically. Minus Zero is not a thing.
No, it's not. like
mathematically, Minus Zero actually does come after Minus One. Well, yeah, I mean theory, but like it's not a thing.
It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. It's not even an imaginary number.
No.
Well, but I remember when I saw minus one, you know, I was like, oh, that must have a special cultural meaning in Japan. And then you come to find out, no, doesn't really mean anything to them either.
Well, regardless, I'm excited. I'm excited about, you know, more Godzilla. I haven't heard anything about the MonsterVerse.
The
TV show and all that stuff.
Yeah. But you know, Apple's like that. Apple is weird about how they promote their shows. It's like they don't promote them until they're right about to hit, you know. Yeah. I would imagine we've got something coming this year, though.
Yeah. And that one, I mean, because of the special effects, I'd imagine it has a long, because it's already filmed. Like, I believe they've already kind of filmed it. But, you know, of course, the post-production is significant with the creature effects. So.
Yeah, and I imagine they can't rush that stuff, you know, to keep it under budget. So it's got to be like, you know, a real longer drawn out process because it's not a priority project, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of TV, we are only about a month away from Fallout Season 2 starting.
Oh, okay.
I did see
Fallout Season 1.
I am so excited. The first season was really good. It looked great, but it wasn't in any location that we actually know and have explored from the games. Season 2, going to New Vegas, even in the trailers, I see locations that I remember playing in the game. And that has me even more excited.
There is one thing I do want you guys to get excited about, streaming-wise. Frankenstein is out on Netflix now. Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein adaptation. Yep. You know, they released it in limited theater release over the last few weeks. And so I went to the theater and saw it. And it is just a fantastic movie. It's beautifully done. It's probably the best interpretation of Frankenstein. And I've seen, you know, quite a few of them. It is probably my favorite interpretation of Frankenstein, movie interpretation of Frankenstein. It is absolutely worth seeing.
And I'm sorry, did you see it in the theater?
I did.
Nice.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like,
it's like a 3-hour movie, isn't it?
I think it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, something like
that. Okay, I thought I heard that it was 3 hours.
No, it's
150 minutes.
Okay, so 2.5 hours, including credits. It's worth it. Totally worth it. I'm really glad I saw it on the big screen because it is definitely a big screen movie, mm-hmm. even though it was made for Netflix. But highly recommend.
Now, I will definitely watch that. If I'd have, when did it hit Netflix?
Recording, just like Friday, so like two days ago.
Yeah.
Okay. I was about to say that would have been a great one to watch on Halloween because I like to watch something themed on Halloween.
Yeah, it is in my watch list. I selected it on Friday when it hit.
Because I love Guillermo del Toro. I have a love hate relationship with him in that I really love him as a person and his imagination and his. But I find a lot of his films have pacing issues, or just don't quite land for me. So I was cautiously optimistic about this one, but I really loved it. So definitely recommend it.
Well, I will definitely check it out.
Yeah. But let's get caught up on comic books since it's been a few weeks. You know, we had a new issue of Batman come out this week. Chip Zdarsky's Batman book. Oh, no, Matt Fraction's.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you talking about?
Sorry, yeah. Now, Chip Zdarsky was the previous writer. This one is Matt Fraction, Jorge Jimenez. And, you know, this kind of continues from last issue where Robin was shot. And, you know, he's in the hospital now. We get confirmation that Robin is still indeed gay, you know, with his boyfriend. His boyfriend has not showed up in a while, but Bernard is in this book. So that's still a thing.
To scold Bruce about how anytime Tim hangs out with Bruce, he comes back battered and bruised.
Mm-hmm.
He did not realize that this was the... I thought that was in the Batman and Robin book. I did not realize this was the series that was in. I did not pick up the issue. But I will, because I loved the last issue. I just didn't realize it was in the main Batman book.
Yeah, I do. I rather enjoy the Fraction Batman. Though I will say there is a jump in the story, which I'm sure, Paul, you'll just automatically explain to me, between this issue and the last one, with Batman in, you know, digitizing, you know, and he's got, you know, the red eyes and he, you know, is like wearing some sort of stealth outfit. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, at the end
of it. He shows up, he's not wearing, I'm sorry?
At the end of the issue where he's like invisible or whatever.
Yeah, he's got this stealth, it says, up in the corners, they're doing the little, you know, identifying what kind of technology he's wearing. So he's wearing stealth suit, light bending, noise dampening, titanographene weave. And it just feels like the couple of times he's shown up or, you know, this has been featured in the book, it doesn't feel like him. And I'm like, is that not Bruce? I think it is Bruce. But it's just, it seems like a very different style of storytelling when, you know, stealth Batman shows up.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. But no, I don't think it's not him. I think it's just, you know, they're kind of trying all these different suit things. And maybe it's intentionally like a different feel based on when he's Batman versus like the book definitely takes on a different tone and color scheme and everything when he's Batman. Uh-huh. Versus when he's Bruce, like
right.
You know, there's a lot of lighter colors, a lot of daytime white borders, you know, based on the page when he's Bruce, and when it flips to Batman, I mean, it's a very tonal shift. Like the backgrounds are mostly black and dark and things like that. The colors are just different. So maybe that's what you're seeing or feeling.
So both in issue 2 and issue 3, we see an issue that Tim has driving a stick. And I felt like maybe this was some sort of metaphorical comment about, you know, Tim coming out as gay. And, you know, maybe the writer is telling us something that Tim can't drive a stick. I'm just saying, I felt like there was a commentary going on there.
It makes me want to go back and read the old Robin books and see, was the Redbird car he had, was that a stick?
Was it automatic? Yeah.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that this is something they're introducing that makes no sense with his past, because he's driven quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do very much enjoy the fact that we find out that the Batmobile has 13 gears, and I think that was an issue too. That wasn't in this issue.
Yeah, that was last issue.
I did get a big kick out of that. I'm really getting a kick out of this book. I think that it is providing some long overdue fun to the Batman book, while not making him a joke. You know, it's still some serious Gotham crap going on, but
I haven't read this one yet, but what I appreciated was it gave us back a Tim that I can enjoy, because in his actual last book that they did with Tim Drake, the writing was terrible and the character was completely out of, like, the tone was all wrong.
Yeah, this is just a good. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Tim Drake is well written in this book. He doesn't show up as much in this issue as the previous issue for obvious reasons, but it's just a good Batman superhero book, right? It's well done. The art's great. I'm still trying to figure out this Alfred thing, and now I'm starting to feel like it's ghost Alfred, not uh-huh. real ghost. Like, it's in his head. I'm starting to feel like it's in his head, Alfred, not hologram Alfred.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good or bad. Like if it's in his head, like, is Batman leaving?
Yeah. And it's important to note that this all started before Batman got shot in the back of the head. So, you can't blame it on whatever concussion he received from the shotgun blast to the back of the head.
Yeah.
So, speaking of terrific art, Paul, did you flip through the preview pages of Batman Static Beyond?
I did. I mean, the art was solid, but I don't know.
I am going to have to get into it. It's got Milestone in it. It's got Static in it. It's got Superman Beyond in it. Yeah, I'm down. I like all three of those characters.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't in the mood when I read it. I'll have to give it another shot.
Well, you get in the mood.
Fine. Well, you know, speaking of Batman Beyond, Batman Beyond is one of the characters, and Tim Drake, because it's Tim Drake Batman Beyond in Justice League Unlimited. You know, we haven't talked in a few weeks, but last week, a couple of DC KO books, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, a couple of DC KO tie-ins came out. You know, Superman number 31 and Justice League Unlimited number 12. And, you know, I picked up both of them. Now, Dan Mora is not the artist on Superman for this issue. They got Eddie Barrows, which is perfectly fine. I think Eddie Barrows is a great Superman artist. You know, so in Superman, Superman tells a tale that's kind of happening on Earth. It starts with Superman, but like then he goes into the tournament, and it's basically what's Lois doing while Superman is in the tournament, right? And so she's trying to follow up on this lead that Doomsday provided, that said, you know, that Doomsday was not built as a killer of Superman. He was built to take down Darkseid. And so, you know, Lois Lane is tracking down that lead at the Fortress of Solitude. And, you know, because if in DCK, I think it was DCK on number one, or maybe it was a super, I don't know. In one of these books, they showed that, you know, Superman's mom, Lara, you know, had kind of an interaction with or familiarity with Doomsday in her youth. And so, you know, they kind of continue that thread. And we get the return of Superboy Prime again. He wasn't gone very long. And in Justice League Unlimited number 12, we have these time-displaced heroes. You know, so we've got Superman Blue, we've got Aquaman with the hook arm, we've got Tim Drake Batman Beyond, all these time-displaced heroes who, again, you know, this takes place simultaneously with the tournament. The heroes who are left behind are discovering that the villains, the remaining villains on the Earth, are perhaps being given power, like extra power by Nero. And mm-hmm. so they have to venture into hell. Oh, in Guy Gardner Warrior. And so they have to venture into hell to tackle that issue.
Paul, I have a question. Like, I saw in the first issue of KO, Aquaman had the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Is he time displaced or like, how does he have the hook?
So the real Aquaman is still there. But what happened during the last crossover, I think it's called We Are Yesterday, what is that they basically took, they describe it as time ghosts. So heroes throughout the different time periods, both the past and the future, have been plucked out, but only like a second of their lives have been plucked out. It's hard to describe, but
yeah, it's kind of like they're after images of these universes that have been destroyed.
Exactly.
And so you've got, you know, Peter David's hook hand Aquaman out there, and this is where I got really disappointed in this book, is that, you know, he's not really Aquaman. He's just an after image of an Aquaman that was, but now never will be. And same thing with Guy Gardner Warrior, Blue Superman, Batman Beyond, etc. You know, these are all just sort of after images that are finite, you know, and that they will wear out. And so, you know,
that they can die, right? Like, I think it opened up like these characters are disposable through this
arc. And it really felt like it reduced the stakes, you know? I mean, I was just like, why did you do that? Why not? What harm is it to, you know, yes, these guys are absolutely the characters from their universes, you know, and pull them out at the last time we saw them as part of that era, you know? This is something that comics do all the time when they go back and mine, you know, stuff from previous generations. And I'm like, I would have liked to have seen, you know, what Aquaman's been up to, what Guy Gardner Warrior has been up to in that mode. Same thing with, you know, Superman Blue. It really ticked me off that, you know, these are just ghost images that, you know, if you do nothing, they're just going to fade away. If they do something, they're just going to fade away. And so there are zero stakes in this for them. You know, all you get is like, oh, I sure do like seeing that artwork, but it's not really the character. And that is what annoyed me about this book. Otherwise, I think this book is fantastic and I love the artwork, but it just ticked me right off. I mean, the minute that was out of the bag, I was like, oh, I could give a shit about this. You know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I actually had the opposite reaction. Like, I do think the whole DCKO thing, the one aspect of it that is both fun and a bit disappointing, is that they've kind of removed the stakes in this entire thing, right? Like they said, you know, whoever wins the tournament can undo everything. So like deaths don't mean anything in the tournament, blah, 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 right?
Right. Well, Batman
was killed in the tournament, but had a back, you haven't read Night Fight yet, but had a backup plan. So like, you know,
but the stakes are reduced. Always got a backup.
Yeah, he does.
So Let me complain about something that wasn't in this book. It was in the Superman book you just talked about. One of the things that kicked KO off was talking to Superman, you know, Bruce talking to Clark about, hey, you have to fight for you. You've got to fight to win. You can't bring everybody along, right? And it was this big lesson that Clark had to learn going into the fight. And then we backstep every bit of that in the Superman issue because Superman can't fight if he doesn't know everyone is protected. And so he's, you know, he falls back on a final crisis solution. You know, they you know, bottle shrink everybody and put them in these super ships to evacuate the Earth. And of course, you know, suddenly we had the technology to do this, you know, in a matter of hours before the KO fight begins. And I'm like, okay, well, this is just stupid. And you've taken all the stakes away. I mean, I don't understand. Yeah. That's one of those things. I'm like, why the F would you do this? You, if you're going to have a meaningful fight, why not strip Superman down to where he does actually have to make a character choice, you know, where he's got to do the hard thing. You know, he's very safe going into this combat. And I just think that's silly. You know, I truly, truly believe that's just silly.
I think, you know, and here's the thing. Let me clarify. I've enjoyed all these books, but I do think there's a bit of overwriting. Like overwriting, you know, W-R-I-T-I-N-G, these books, because I kind of feel like everything is a bit over-explained, a bit like we need to answer every single question. Like, how does every single thing work? How does every single person get saved? What happens to blah, blah, blah? You know, what is Joe Smith doing during DCKO? It just kind of feels like...
Like the opposite of a Grant Morrison book?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of feels like everything's a bit over-articulated. And, you know, here's the thing. I get it, because sometimes the inverse, like a Grant Morrison book, is that the lack of things making sense pulls you out of the story. But to a certain extent, the over-explaining of things, it kind of removes the stakes to like you said, Aaron. It kind of like... Okay, well, it's so over-engineered that maybe, you know, like the heart of it is a little lost, maybe. I don't know. The fun of it. But I mean, I'm still enjoying it. It's just, it feels a little over-engineered. Like, especially in this book, like, okay, Mercy and the super ships and the Brainiac and the blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And the, you know, like, okay, okay.
Yeah, I mean, some of that, it's like, okay, I could see you could evacuate Metropolis. You cannot evacuate the entire Earth.
You don't know. You can.
And you're like, yeah, the Teen Titans got this done. I'm like, oh, really?
Really? Beast Boy evacuated the planet. Uh-huh. Okay.
Cyborg. Yeah. Uh-huh. Cyborg. Yeah, totally.
But for what it's worth, at least DC stopped trying to make Cyborg a thing. So I do appreciate that. I appreciate that DC has finally accepted that no one cares about Cyborg.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So I hate to leave everyone with the impression that KO is stupid. I really do enjoy it, but there are just some things I'm like, why didn't you do that?
Yeah,
I do want to leave everyone with that impression because
I know you were saying.
Yeah, I think KO is stupid, but in my mind, that's part of the fun of it. And I think, so, you know, and keep in mind, these are tie-in books. If you're reading DCKO, you probably don't even need to read these. I'm getting more out of the story because I'm reading them. But like, I feel like DCKO is written in such a way that you wouldn't necessarily know all this stuff that we're talking about, nor would it really impact the actual of the, you know, the main thread there. But yeah. So that's what's going on in the DC universe. But like we, you know, we talked about earlier, we're not picking up a lot of Marvel either. But for some reason, Aaron, you picked up Amazing Spider-Man issue 15 this week.
Yeah, and you know why? I dug the cover. That's the long and the thick of it is I really enjoyed the cover on Amazing Spider-Man number 15. It's got an image of Spider-Man, you know. Clearly in distress with an alien crawling out of his body. And, you know, it's almost Venom style, except that it's not. It's a Technarch. And I love the Technarchs. People might be familiar with Warlock, from the New Mutant books was a Technarch. This is, I forget this guy's name, Glitch, I think is his name.
Yeah, Glitch.
And I really enjoy that storytelling. And I did not realize that Spider-Man was in space, but that's where he is right now as part of the Imperial crossover. And I have to say, kind of enjoyed this book.
I was really curious to hear your opinion, Aaron, because I know you're not reading it. And this is smack in the middle of his storyline.
Yeah.
There is a lot that's been going on. He was in a big fight. He lost the fight, got tossed into space. Back on Earth, Norman Osborn is in the Spider-Man suit pretending to be Spider-Man, while Ben Reilly is walking around as Peter Parker, keeping his civilian identity from being missing. Meanwhile, Peter is off in space trying to get stronger so he can come back and fight the person that punched him into space.
Mm-hmm. Well, none of that was important to me. It was just, Peter out on a spaceship with Rocket Raccoon and some other folks that I don't know. I thought this was a fun book. I thought it was
Rocket has been a highlight of this arc for me. I love just his constant complaining about people named Peter.
Mm-hmm.
It just amuses me so much.
Well, and I enjoyed the byplay between Peter and the yellow woman. I don't know who the hell she is, but she kisses the hell out of him and surprises him. That seemed like a lot of fun. She was impressed by his heroic nature. Anyway, I thought it was a fun book. I thought it was beautifully drawn. It was nice to see a sort of fun spacefaring return to Marvel with something that made a little bit more sense than some of the other stuff that they're doing is making. I thought it was a fun book.
I love that Peter's going to get him some while he's in space.
Well, hello, some of that space strange.
That's right.
Yeah. Space strange.
Yeah.
Because I like part of
the vacation. It looks like I I'm looking it up with you guys talking about it, and it looks like the arc started in issue 13, maybe the space stuff.
That sounds right. I'd have to look back at the issues. I might have to
check it out.
I don't think this one even cuts back to Earth at all on it for what's going on Earth. This was entirely just in space.
Yeah.
So you didn't see any of the Earth stuff going on. It was a mystery at first. Like when it first started happening, they didn't say that it wasn't Peter in the costume, and they didn't say that it wasn't Peter that was acting really strange, but it was kind of obvious it wasn't Peter anymore because of the way he was behaving, both in costume and out.
Okay.
Until they reveal that Peter is in space. Because I love seeing Ben back in a non-villainous way.
Oh, okay. So it's Ben again. All right.
Yeah, because Ben is the one that is pretending to be Peter to cover Peter's regular life.
Mm.
He is still insane, but he is trying to hold it together and trying to actually do something good for Peter, while Osborn is trying to do something good for keeping Spider-Man out there and being in costume there, which all the other spider people were not very happy about when they discovered.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, I'm not advocating that anybody jump in to the spider books. That's not my recommendation. I'm just saying that this book was fun. I'm not sure that I'll pick up the next book since it looks like it's not going to involve the space spider storyline. But for this one issue, very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, it seems like the way they've been doing this story is, since they've revealed that he's in space, they'll do one issue with the things going on Earth, and then the next issue will be the space stuff.
Ah, is this a monthly book or a bi-monthly book?
It is bi-monthly.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe I'm buying every odd issue. But yeah. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Interesting books are coming out next week. Not, from there. There's obviously, like we talked about in the big two, some DC KO tie-ins, from Marvel, a lot of Age of Revelation, not a lot outside of those. However, some other interesting books coming out, including the third issue of Horizon Dark Descent, which I continue to enjoy, and it continues to creep me out. Really well done book. Good prequel to the movie. From Dynamite, we get Gargoyles and the Fantastic Four.
Number two.
A crossover between... Oh, it said number. It says number one on the issue I'm looking at, but maybe it's number two.
Because I have number one. Like the G.I. Joe book you and I were talking about before, I have number one on my iPad, bought and downloaded from like a month ago.
Oh, that's Fantastic Four Gargoyles. This is Gargoyles Fantastic Four. I didn't realize.
Okay.
Yeah, this is one of them's coming from Marvel, one of them's coming from Dynamite.
Gotcha.
So it's a crossover between the two properties. I did not realize there was one a month ago. So I'm going to investigate that one. Crossover between those two properties. Yeah. So I will check out the first one and see if it's worth, but it is written by Greg Wiseman, who, you know, is the creator of the TV show Gargoyles. So seems pretty cool. There is also a prequel comic from Marvel Comics and 20th Century Studios for Predator Badland. So a prequel to the movie that just came out. I have not seen the movie yet, but I'm really excited to. And because I really liked the Prey and the Killer of Killers. And so I'm looking forward to Badlands. But a prequel comic comes out from Marvel next week. Also from Marvel Comics, 1776, from J. Michael Straczynski with art by Ron Lim. Mm. It is Revolutionary Warriors Assemble. Calamity strikes when a mysterious force dares to tamper with the sacred threads of history. Captain America and his formidable squad of Marvel heroes leap into action. Their mission, to safeguard the founding of the United States of America. The fate of the nation hangs in the balance at the dawn of the revolution as these valiant heroes hit the treacherous waters of the past to ensure a future that remains untarnished. So, sounds like a time travel story. It shows Captain America, Spider-Man, Cyclops, Iron Man, Hulk, Invisible Woman, and Doctor Strange, I guess, teaming up with some of the main historical figures during the revolutionary period. So I don't know. I'm going to check out the first issue. I mean, you get Ron Lim on art. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it sounds like it's set to, coincide with next year's anniversary. So
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
There is a book that I would be excited about next week, except all of the crossovers with Marvel were terrible. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Godzilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be excited and I want to buy it, but the Marvel ones were just so bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll give this first issue a shot. So if you want to try it, Wayne, let me know. I'll give it a shot.
We want to know what you're thinking of DC KO and Marvel's Imperial and all the things. What's getting you through? What's your go-to comic right now? Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use comments on the show, win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
What a deal. Well, let's get together and talk about stuff real soon.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.